You're listening to Tight Radio. My name is John L. Walters, editor of I. Now We're Talking.
Type Radio.
Editor Rick Pointer, which is, was he the first editor of I?
Yes, Rick was the founding editor of I.
And he's
He's...
my question is, do you feel he's still looking over your shoulder at the work you're doing now?
No. Rick is a great friend, and we have a drink together or a meal together every 2 or 3 months, and we talk about all kinds of stuff, and then at the end we say, and about the piece you're writing in the next eye. And Rick, this went into the red there, Rick writes the regular critique column for I, so that's a very important part of the magazine. It's also a very important part of the website, because we have an extra critique which is only published on the website, so it's in between issues. So it's every 6 weeks there's a new critique piece by I, about a new critique piece by Rick. And Rick is a very good controversialist. He's able to, he treads where other design writers fear to go. You may have seen the piece about Vogue Italia, very critical about the kind of torture chic spread that Stephen Meisel did. He's just written a very nice piece about Fiona Tan, the artist and artist books. He doesn't feel constrained just to write about graphic design. He'll write about a website. We had a very interesting web-only piece very recently. And Rick is now a research fellow at the Royal College of Art, which means he's doing research projects some of which are very detailed. And we've been the beneficiary of some of the extra research that he's able to do at the Royal College of Art. So, for example, the piece about graphic design and surrealism in the new issue of I, I think benefits from the extra time that Rick's had to go into a subject that really hasn't been tackled by other writers. It doesn't seem to be addressed by the new... There's a fantastic new exhibition of surrealism at the Victoria and Albert Museum. So he has a very interesting role within I, but it's not an editorial role. It's as a kind of eminence grise, I suppose. He's... of course, as an ex-editor of the magazine, he has a very special insight into the workings of the magazine and the standards and the way it works. And of course, he set a very high standard in the way the magazine is produced.
The other question I have is, I mean, being so many years with a magazine, does every issue become harder and harder to come up with ideas? Or do you have a backlog of a million ideas and then you just don't have enough time to do everything you want?
I think that the latter is the case. When I first started to edit I, it was actually quite difficult to persuade writers to do the bigger pieces. It felt quite difficult to find the right writer for the right subject. For example, in I-34, which was one of the very earliest issues I edited, and this comes back to a personal enthusiasm to go against what I was saying, but I wanted to do a piece about the road sign system in the UK, the Kinnear Calvert road signs, and there was a very good writer who agreed to write a piece for me, and then at the last minute said, "I'm sorry, I can't do it. I don't have time." And deadlines were approaching. It was going to be a big piece. I had a big hole if I didn't find a writer. And after calling round and talking to a few friends, I called Phil Baines, who I didn't know very well at the time. And Phil immediately accepted the challenge and wrote a fantastic piece. And we went to the St. Bride Library. We went to the St. Bride Library and we found the maquettes that were for the original road signs. It's very interesting bits of research that Phil did very quickly because the time was ticking by. And So that was a kind of scary piece to do, but it was also it was a fantastic piece to do because I had a great writer who was not the writer I thought was going to be the right person. We had great photographs. Anthony Oliver, who's another person, member of the team I should mention, has been the photographer on I since issue one. He worked with Stephen Coates and Rick on the very first issue of I. And Anthony brings a very tactile method of photography to the magazine, and wherever possible we photograph the books, and we photograph posters and graphic ephemera. So that's what part of the way that I magazine looks. But I remember there was a time when I seemed to be, there weren't a lot of ideas coming into me, and I had to kind of seek new writers and persuade people and maybe find somebody who wrote about art and say, please come and write about graphic design. They're not, designers are really nice people. They're nicer than
is
artists.
Also like the other angle is important to our magazine. It's like not ask graphic designers to write about graphic, but ask other...
No, this is absolutely correct. If you get somebody who's an expert in music or film or literature or fine art to write about graphic design, and you can maybe take them by the hand a little bit, but you know, you show them the right reference points to read, then you can sometimes get fantastic results. But then I've had a few occasions where people say, I don't get graphic design. So I have to say, okay, thank you for trying. And we go back to Steve Heller and the writers who are very, very comfortable with design. Kerry William Purcell is a great writer on the history of design. Catherine Dixon. There are writers who don't think of themselves as writers, but they have such a great knowledge in the curation of design or the understanding of design. Say Mark Thompson, for example, who is a member of our editorial board, who I've met relatively recently, but he's got a fantastic appetite for design. He wrote a piece about an Eric Gill book which we featured in I-62. He's just done a review in the new issue about an exhibition of the best Swiss books. You get a kind of insight and maybe an insider view on design, which you don't get from a regular journalist or critic. Another good example of a design writer that I met very early in my days at I, and that's Richard Hollis, who's another eminent squeeze in the way that I works, and also a critic of the magazine. He gives very interesting feedback at times. And Richard wrote a fantastic piece about the history of the Architectural Review, which was great because I used to work at the Architectural Review and I knew some of the editors and writers there, and I knew there's a fantastic library which used to be kind of a couple of meters from my desk when I worked there, with every issue from the end of the 19th century. And Richard did a fantastic piece about the Architectural Review, and it was very nice a few issues ago to actually do a big reputations interview with Richard Hollis, because people think of him as a writer and historian and sometimes forget that he's a great designer as well. And I think that was quite a revelation to students who know Richard Hollis as the guy who wrote A Concise History of Graphic Design, but then they see these wonderful pieces he did for the Whitechapel Art Gallery and wonderful book designs and poetry cover designs.
You are really name-dropping. Is there a sort of concept you really wanted to put all these people that sort of co-working with you on the magazine and give them credit?
I think I have to say this all the time because I feel this, I'm very conscious attending a design event, particularly a kind of, you know, a star designer event where I'm rubbing shoulders with Vince Frost and Leonardo Sonnoli, and I feel, here am I with the guy with supposedly the best job in graphic design, but I'm not a designer. I'm not here to say, look at this great campaign for a French theatre. You know, I'm in complete awe of a designer like Annette Lentz, who can do these very difficult jobs over a long period of time with a difficult client in a community. The process, the work of graphic design is something very, very special, which I enjoy, I appreciate, I cherish, and I have no aspirations to, you know, I'm very glad that I never tried to be a graphic designer, because I think it's a very, very difficult job. So I'm here with people who are showing the maybe a mid-career achievements, or maybe a lifetime's achievement, so someone like George Hardy. And all I am is a ringmaster, or, you know, I'm an intermediary. I'm a person who is able to bring this material to an audience. So it's important to me that I don't talk too much about myself, but that I perhaps emphasize my role is as to go back to my previous life as a record producer. I'm there to bring out things in other designers and writers that perhaps they can't bring out straight away themselves.
Well, that's exactly the question I had in mind, how you put your previous experience being a record music producer and apply that to the editing of a design magazine.
It's very interesting because when you're a musician, you're a composer, which is how I started my life, my career, you have to have a very big ego. You have to get out on stage and say, this is my music and I want you to like it. And well, in fact, I don't care if you like it, but it's good. And you play night after night in tiny, shitty little punk clubs and jazz clubs and art centres where they turn the lights off as you're walking on stage and the keyboard player sprains his ankle and the dressing room is next to a toilet that's covered in graffiti and the sink's broken. So I had a long life of that kind of, the life of an artist, but also the life of being the dregs of society at the same time. I was fortunate enough to have a big hit record in the early 80s with the band I had called Landscape. And when the band broke up a couple of years later, because, of course, success completely ruined us, as it does so many bands. When the band broke up, I became a record producer, and I suddenly had to subsume my ego and deal with bands who were just a few years younger than me, who had huge egos but didn't know how to make a record, didn't know how to finish a song, and didn't know which of their songs was the one that would get played on the radio. And or maybe I had to work with jazz musicians who wanted to play for 20 minutes, but we wanted to have, you know, 5-minute version that would sound, that would actually make them friends in a wider context. So I learned very quickly that you deal with, when you deal with creative people, if you are yourself a creative person, you can also, you have an insight and empathy into what they do, but you also have to use your creativity to let them do much more. And maybe you, that they have something that's maybe not quite finished, that you say, well, actually, if you make the intro 20 seconds instead of a minute, you create a greater drama. And so I find myself saying the same thing to a writer. Well, this is reads like the introduction to a 200-page book, but we have a 3,000-word article. Can we perhaps make this a little shorter? Can you tell us very quickly the subject of your article? Or can you tell me why somebody who's never heard of this designer should spend the time to turn the pages and look at this work? You know, you really have to convince me, and you have to convince our readers. So the record producer and the magazine editor is acting as an intermediary between the subject matter and the journalists and the reader, who is maybe doesn't have a lot of time or doesn't even speak English as a first language. So you have to kind of grab this attention. And in this, I've learned a lot from my editor at the Architectural Review, Peter Davey, who's a very eccentric and very interesting editor, kind of the old school. He's retired now. Sorry, I'm talking too much.
Type radio.